We know it's terrible to interrupt the flow of your favorite podcast, Capital Hacking, with this pesky commercial, but let me do it anyway. Forgive me. That is right. We have to talk about the best event coming up in April. It's April 19th and 20th. It's Learn and Grow. It's that Accountable Equity Investor Community event, open not only to our current investors, but to anyone who wants to see the power of an accredited investor community. It's going to be hosted at one of the beautiful Accountable Equity Resorts called LBI National. It's near Renault Winery, actually. It's in New Jersey. We'd love for you to register and find out what everyone is talking about and why this type of investing, this type of mastermind community might be right for you. Check it out at accountableequity.com. Choose, learn, and grow. Thank you.
Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
It really all started with just being assigned to a particular manager, and one of the clients he was responsible for placing a phone call and saying, hey, we need help with this particular situation. And he called me into his office and said, what do you know about this? I said, absolutely nothing. He goes, well, go figure it out. And that's really was the start. So on the back of that little experience, I became known in the office as someone who knew about this piece of our, of the tax law in our business. And it just grew from there. So like, you just never know, like, what the little things that happen in your life, how they, you know, put you on a path.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
This is it. Don't get scared now.
They may take our life, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella's story out of nowhere.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Capital Hacking begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. It's your friend Josh here. Thanks for taking a few moments to jump into this audio mastermind and where we get to see through the eyes of others and discover what is the ideal path for us and what doors can they open for us. Well, that's the story Ben Garfunkel and I are going to go through. We're going to chronicle his development of his own personal capital, his human capital, and how that turned into financial capital by being one of the top executives in his expertise and then reaching executive board level positions, which is exciting. Some of us, that's our goal. So if that's one of your goals, this gentleman's going to share with you the path he took. We're also going to jump deeply into how does someone who's involved in so much public market work never have a chance to discover this private investing world? And then to share the journey into private equity ownership, like what we do at Accountable Equity and like what hundreds of other good people have shared with you on this show before, investing in real estate using small real estate funds, or direct investing in real estate. This world of private investing and the community involved in it is some of the topics we discover together with Ben Garfunkel. I think you're really going to love hearing this extremely intelligent gentleman chronicle his story. And we're just touched to be part of his life and to have him in our community. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy the show. Wow. This is a day we have been waiting for about 5 months, 4 months, maybe a little less. Right, Ben? I met you in person at the LBI project.
That's right. That was back in May.
So LBI National, we're both partners on that. So before we get into the meat and potatoes, Ben, we always like to stop, pause a minute. I personally am a big fan of yours, but the fans of the Capital Hacking haven't met you yet. So where do you reside? What makes Ben Garfunkel tick? And does he have a family?
Yeah. So I reside in Naples, Florida most of the year, and I spend my summers up at the Jersey Shore. Having been originally from New Jersey, you can't take that out of you. So you have to come home every once in a while. As far as family, I've been married to my beautiful wife, Gina, for nearly 30 years, and I have two beautiful daughters who are grown, out the door, productive members of society, paying their taxes and doing their things.
Oh, well, you know, Ben, I know where we're going to take this story. So people are going to fall in love with you as I have. But no, you have a great family. And I think I met Gina. I did meet Gina.
Yeah,
I've not met the daughters yet.
Nope.
Someday they'll probably who doesn't want to come to a resort your family has a part ownership in? It's cool, right? So
absolutely.
One of the cool things is getting to know Ben, everybody. He is a great testament to developing himself and developing opportunities and seizing them. And I love your life story, Ben. So if we could begin, I would love to highlight within your chronological order of your life. Normally, we don't get a chance to get to know somebody's, at least their journey, as well as we hope to get to know yours, Ben. But as we're listening to it, friends and family, this is our audio mastermind. We're hearing other ways of living and we're thinking, wow, what can I apply to my life or how can I invest in my own human capital development? And I think, Ben, what I love about you is your career trajectory is one of the rare, wonderful trajectories to the pinnacle of your product and company. And then you created another journey. So I want to hear what, Ben, where did it all begin? What was your career like? And I know you recently retired. So what was your career like and what did you end up doing?
So I spent 37 years at one of the big four accounting firms.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's a terrific career. If you had asked me when I started, if I would be there for 37 years, I would have thought that you were crazy. I didn't see that as my path when I first entered the firm. I thought of it as a first stepping stone on a career that I really didn't have a clear vision for where it would go. But things fell into place there and I had a series of great experiences that took me on a journey that I couldn't have imagined.
I think you talked about mentors, right? Was it a mentor early on that helped you think about it differently?
So, if I go all the way back, Josh, it was actually my father.
Awesome. Good for you.
I actually wanted to be an architect when I was a kid.
Ooh, no wonder you like buying beautiful buildings. I'm sorry.
That's right. There's a connection there. And so I did some drafting classes in high school and all. And my dad said, this is great. Think about what your career is going to look like as an architect. And I didn't have a clear vision of that. So I actually spoke to somebody who was in the profession. And there was things about it that were really interesting to me. But there were things I had no idea. And they opened my eyes a little bit. And I said, you know what? Maybe it is really what I think it is. So my dad said, you know what? If you're not sure, and I really wasn't sure. He says, if you're not sure about what you want to do, my suggestion is go get yourself an accounting degree. Because I know lots of successful people that end up in lots of different parts of the business world or different things in life. But they all started with that as a foundation. So that was the greatest advice I could have gotten.
Mm.
I did that. Once I became an accounting student, the ambition was to join one of the then big eight firms, manage that. And like I said, I thought I'd be there a couple of years, get certified, and then see where life took me. But it stuck. And I had a series of experiences and people who, guided me. And it just took me on a great journey, eventually, leading a piece of our international tax businesses for almost a decade.
Wow.
I led that business, which was great. It gave me the opportunity to gain a number of skills, see parts of the world that I never imagined I would have, interact with people from all over the world, different cultures, which was fascinating to me. It was just fantastic. And all through that, there was this underlying current of being connected to people and human resource type functions within organizations. And that was the theme that stuck all the way through. My last role at the firm was as the chief talent officer for the tax practice, which was a fantastic role that kind of brought a lot of the skills and experiences I'd had over the years together. And the role was all about trying to provide the best employee experience for the people in the tax business. I had to interact with lots of different people and pieces of the firm, but really fascinating. And then really the capstone of it all was I was elected to the firm's board of directors, which if you had told a 21-year-old kid coming out of college that that was in your future, I would have, like I said, you would have been, I didn't see that.
We'll pause for just a moment because, when someone says a comment like that, I just don't know. If you're driving your fancy Teslas, listeners, and you're like, did he just say he became a board member of one of the big firms? That I remember when you mentioned it, I actually had to step back and think, maybe I don't know what a board at the big four is. We're talking how many partners and how many CPAs in one of the big four? 50,000?
Well, for the U.S. firm, there was over 2,000 partners.
2,000 partners. How many clients or staff, I mean?
Altogether, the headcount for the firm was around 35,000.
So 35,000 people. And, of course, we're honored to be leaders of companies with hundreds of people. But when you start thinking that scale and then you think a board is what, a dozen, a little more than a dozen people?
A little bit more than a dozen, yeah.
I mean,
a dozen and a half.
Your responsibilities, because we think, I'm sure you're like me, you think in the term of servant leadership. So that means you're on a board trying to support the livelihood of 35,000 people, making sure you're making prudent, good decisions for growth so they can earn better every year. Did you feel heavy when you got to that position? Did it feel heavy on your shoulders?
I didn't feel heavy on my shoulders. I felt I was prepared for it. I felt the weight of the, it's an awesome responsibility, but I didn't shrink from it. You want to do good by the partners of the firm because really you're their proxy for oversight over the management of the firm. I think also the pace and the issues that you're dealing with, they're coming at you so fast. I don't think you have time to feel the weight of the burden.
That's a good point.
You just do what you need to do. But what just a fascinating experience. And it was great. Those are the best years of my career was being able to do that.
I love hearing it. I mean, you know, from listening to your story over a few times, it really was a journey where you kept saying yes to the next opportunity. And by the way, you did say one other cool thing that we can all keep in mind about our own careers is you were positioned into a track in that career that was international tax, which wasn't the largest portion of the business. So you had like this nice trajectory where you could, you know, apply yourself, show value, and you had like a, I don't know, you had a runway. You had a runway, yeah. I should say. And you took it and went with it.
Took it and went with it. I mean, it really all started with just being assigned to a particular manager and one of the clients he was responsible for placing a phone call and saying, hey, we need help with this particular situation. And he called me into his office and said, what do you know about this? I said, absolutely nothing. He goes, well, go figure it out. And that's really was the start. You know, so, you know, on the back of that little experience, I became known in the office as someone who knew about this piece of our, you know, of the tax law in our business. And it just grew from there. So like, you just never know, like what the little things that happen in your life, how they, you know, put you on a path.
And the hustle. I mean, there's a little hustle in that story, even though you're part of a time you're young and it's a big firm, you had to show that hustle and that grit, and you did. And by the way, in any entrepreneurial thing we've been a part of, it's like we get to a roadblock of growth. As a matter of fact, that's actually an interesting thing about growing a company is you get to a roadblock in growth and you're like, we've been working hard. We got there. Now we have another roadblock, which how do you see around the corner of a roadblock you've never encountered yet? How did you go about it? Let's use your example of learning that expertise in tax. How did you overcome that lack of knowledge?
Trial and error, I think. I mean, you draw on the skills you do have, right? So you've learned a little bit about tax law. You know how to research stuff. You know where your sources are. You go read and study up and make the effort to educate yourself. You know, the early days, you know, probably got a couple of things wrong, but you learn as you go.
It's awesome.
You get access to people who have similar experience and you exchange ideas and try to learn from them. Yeah, you take a chance. You
know, I love what happens once somebody does that. So this is for anybody who's in a firm or any organization and you're a hard worker, you have a good, clear mind. Once you did it, once you got past like the bubble of knowledge that you had to get or this little aggregation of knowledge, you said soon the firm started saying, that's our guy. So it's because you actually, you may have had the same IQ as the other person, but you took this little special knowledge, got there. And so instead of them having to learn the special knowledge, you became the starting running back. They're like, we got the running back. He's over here. And that's actually just a commonplace lesson. Like right now we build complex marketing programs and I'm like, well, who knows how to use Instagram, right? Or who knows how to use this? If someone on the team would just learn it and get to an expert level, we would be like, you're our expert. And then they could like run with that career. Anyway, I want to go back if you don't mind and pause because there's a couple nice things for us fathers in the story, Ben, in the fact that you talk positively about your father.
Yeah.
The moment there. Is your father with us?
No, he's not. He passed about 6 years ago. Yeah.
All right. One thing that you said in that story, which I picked up on because I'm a father of teenagers and things, it sounds like he redirected your architecture career without being blunt. Was there some kind of like, did he use questioning? It sounds like he used questioning, which was an interesting, it's just kind of interesting even for me as a leader. I'm like, that somehow you did not feel offended that he didn't like your idea for architecture.
I don't think he didn't. I didn't like it. I think he just wanted me to have my eyes wide open.
Yeah.
He was pretty good that way. I mean, he really wanted me to find my own path, but I think he wanted me to do it with, like I said, with eyes wide open. So I think that's all he did. He just got me access to some people to help educate myself. And then when he saw that I wasn't sure, that's when he provided the suggestion.
That's awesome. What a nice method. You know, you have to have patience to have that strategy as a father. That's awesome. Because sometimes you're like, hey guys, come on, you're about to run off a cliff. Let's just stop, turn. Yeah. But really that's not always the right way. But back to the growth mindset too. Do you have a brother? Do you have a sister, Ben?
I have a younger brother.
Younger brother. Yeah. So it sounded like even back then you were willing and eager to figure out life and to make audibles. What was your family career? What was the family's business? Were they in accounting? Is that how you chose accounting?
No, not at all. My father's original background was he was a commodities trader.
Okay.
So, you know, did the commute to Manhattan every day from the burbs. After commodities training, he actually ended up in insurance sales.
Did he really? At what year? Like what age?
Oh, he must have been late 40s.
That seems like a big switch.
Yeah, you know, I think the commodities training burnt them out.
You know,
I never had like that detailed conversation with him about it. I was a little young at the time he made that transition, but I think he was burnt out.
Yeah. Somehow though, okay, so in the last part of the story that I like, and it showed the seeds of your future were in those conversations you mentioned about your father, because you said, why don't I go ahead and go into accounting? My father said that everybody who he's seen in business that relied on accounting really does well in the future because they actually, the numbers make sense to them and they can make good business decisions. I'm sure he was proven right by that, obviously. But you actually saw it as a stepping stone. See, that's what I mean about your growth mindset. You're like, well, I'll do this for 3 to 5 years. I'll have great credential. And then I'll actually go into a business, perhaps. What was your idea back then, by the way? Were you thinking leadership of a company or were you thinking accountancy?
I was too young to really.
You just knew it was a good stepping stone.
I just knew it was a good stepping stone. And I don't know if I just had a blind faith or if it was just, you know, just being a kid and being, you know, I just didn't know. I just said, see, to me, this is a good place to start. I don't know where it's going to lead, but I know this is the good first step. And then we'll see where we go from there.
By the way, I love it. If you're listening, you want to figure out a career, I would say go into accounting first too. Now let's talk about one last thing. You said you went to travel. You traveled a lot because you chose the international route. Yeah. What culture was the most surprising and left the biggest impression on you?
Oh, wow. That's a fantastic question. The cultures I dealt with initially, we had a lot of European-owned subsidiaries that were our clients. So I was dealing with a lot of people from Germany, Switzerland, France, the Netherlands, the UK. Those were the early ones where I got exposure to people. And I think the most interesting culture was the Germans and the Swiss, I think. I actually ended up going there a number of times and, you know, getting to understand a little bit about those countries and where the people I was dealing with came from, which provided a lot of insight, actually. Later in my career, I think the cultures I really love the most, South American cultures, are just fantastic.
Wow.
And the ones that seem to me the most maybe different are some of the Asian cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's
lovely.
Just the opportunity to go places, get to know people. It was great.
It is great.
The best thing about it, though, Josh, I'll tell you, at the end of the day, people are the same. You know what I mean? At the very core of it, people are the same. And if we all just remembered that, we'd be in a better world.
We would. You know, a couple of years ago, when I thought, you know, everything's so supercharged these days with political language, I'm like, let's get away from political language. What if we, with that premise, you know, people have the same wants, hurts, desires, needs.
Sit around a table and break bread together.
Break bread. I mean, that's what I'm like. We're in the hospitality business in the day. I'm like, this is the original way to create community, no matter what background you're in.
Yeah.
So, Ben, we're going to let Melanie say hello on the radio. She always says hello in the middle because we're doing some cool stuff with Accountable Equity. But I want to come right back and share the next portion of your journey and what's it like to take the next step. And we're going to get to that right after the break.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey,
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. Enjoy.
Woo! We're back. All right, Ben. All right. Awesome stories about getting to the pinnacle of your career, making it on a board of directors, which probably changed you in a lot of ways, as far as broadening. But then you go from that to retirement. Okay, yeah. So share that with us, and then share with us the next why we even know each other and what you're doing now these days.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with, when I retired, my thoughts about retirement before retiring were that I would, I'd continue to go to 1,000 miles an hour. I'd, find some, corporate board to sit on or some charitable board to be a part of. I just had this vision of what retirement would look like. And you know what? One of the things that I got some counseling around right before, the firm did a great job of, as we were stepping out, gave us access to professional sales to actually help you through that transition. And it's a big transition. The best thing I learned was to be kind to yourself. Give yourself time and space to figure out what you want to do. And there's only one person you're now accountable to, maybe for the first, other than perhaps your family, right? Is yourself. And if you want to sit on the couch and do absolutely nothing, It's okay. You got to be gentle on yourself. It's okay if that's what you want to do. That's not what I wanted to do. But it turned out I didn't want to do the things that I thought I wanted to do as I led up to retirement. So I'm doing a potpourri of things.
Wait a second. Of hundreds and hundreds of shows, nobody's ever said that, but I used to say that. That's one of my expressions, a potpourri. A potpourri of things. Sorry. Yeah. I love that. Go ahead. What's your potpourri? I know one of them that's my favorite thing you're doing right now. So I know you're going to say it first.
It'll be on the list. Don't worry. So I've had a couple consulting gigs, which have been great and interesting. So people have tapped into my experience, my specific experience. That's been fun. I've been spending time, and then we'll come back to this, because is managing my investments, right? That then thinking about my financial future and how to deal with that once your mindset changes, once you stop working and you're retiring, right? So that's been a part of it. I've continued to mentor some people at the firm and outside the firm as well, some college students.
Oh, good.
Which has been good to share my experience and help guide them. I'm in the gym more than I've been in like
You are
decades.
A healthy looking dude. I will give you that.
For my age, I feel good. The traveling and the airplanes really takes it out of you. And I feel better than I felt physically in years. So that's good. I'm even the one you want for the end.
I love that one. I'm so
so I played the piano as a kid, and like the typical kid, I wanted to play baseball instead. And, said, I don't want to practice piano anymore. And my parents said, you're going to regret this. And sure enough, I regretted it. And so now I'm teaching myself how to play the piano again. So I'm getting back into playing piano.
That's pretty cool.
That's a lot of fun. I'm golfing a little. I'm an avid pickleball player.
That's my favorite, man. Yeah. I got to learn this pickleball. Everybody's talking about pickleball.
Yeah. Well, I'm also doing some instruction. So I'm not just playing, but I'm sharing my passion for the game and my desire to teach and mentor people and put those two together. I'm teaching a little bit of that. I joined a boat club, as you know.
That's right. I remember that. That's my favorite. That's another fun thing you taught me about.
I thought that was the one you were wanting me to get to. So I've become a boater, which I've never done in my life before. Doing a little fishing, something, my father had a love of fishing and I never picked it up with him while he was alive for some reason. I had no interest in it, but my wife is an avid fisher person. I know.
Yeah, nice. That's
so
nice.
So I don't want to say I have like the huge angler bug, but it's fun. So I enjoy doing it, periodically. I'm golfing just a little bit. Everyone says, oh, you must be golfing a ton. A little bit. I like it. I don't love it. I don't live the golf. But I'm also spending time with family and friends in a way that I haven't been able to do, before when I was going 1,000 miles an hour.
Is the boating helping that? I mean, you and I went on a boat ride the other day, but is that getting you out with the family more, or is that not the same value? That's not the same thing.
Yeah, when we're together, we definitely do that. Yes. My kids live in different parts of the country, so we're not always all together, but that is something we do. And particularly with friends, our various different friend circles, we always take advantage of the boat and bring our different friend circles together. Yeah.
So we'll take a quick sidebar there for one second. It was Ben who met me after he invested with us. He said, have you ever heard of these Freedom Boat Clubs and boat clubs? Because we were looking at a marina at the time. And I told him that. And he said, well, then you should look at Freedom Boat Club. And ever since then, it's been a bug in my mind. I'm like, I think these are pretty cool. Guys like you that don't want to have the burden of owning the boat, but there's like a whole, just in case if you haven't heard of these things, look it up sometime, because they are interesting. Pretty modest cost. You call down, you get a boat, go out, you have limits. You can even use it at other clubs. Very cool.
It's been great for me. It's been great for me.
And then this is an inside conversation for us, for everybody. So Ben and I have been talking about the whole world of private investing.
Yeah.
And then one of the things Ben's been sharing with me is like, you know, have you ever wanted to add advisors to your team and whatever? And really curious about what Ben has to say. And others have, Richard Wilson from Family Office has said the same things. Like, would you like us to be a board member or something to that effect? So that's for another show, actually, Ben, if you don't mind. We'll talk about that some other time. But there's another part that if you could share with the audience, yeah. You grew up through the whole rank of CPA firms yeah. that I imagine your number one clients were pretty large scale corporations, and that you would have been in touch with the public markets your whole life. I mean, yeah. You know, the way people put their money into the public markets. It was a big honor when you invested with Melanie and I and our team. I believe you shared with me, were we one of the first private investments you ever did? Or had you done some of these already?
I've looked at a couple. You're one of the first ones I actually put money with.
And that was really an honor to me, because I thought, well, what a thoughtful person, you know, cares about what you do and make thoughtful decisions. Would you mind, just for the case study, but share with the audience why a gentleman like you even looks at private deals and how we ever met, basically.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you know, because of the career I was in, you know, all of my retirement assets were in, you know, traditional qualified plans, and the investment choices in qualified plans are, you know, typical equity based or, you know, financial products. You're not going to see private type of investments inside those plans. And when I retired, I was thinking about, you know, how do I make my money last? How is it invested? Am I properly, and the biggest thing is, am I properly diversified?
Yes.
And, you know, thinking about, you know, where we've been over the last couple of years in terms of inflation, and wanting to have more, you know, hard assets, particularly income producing real estate in my portfolio, was one of the driving factors. And I didn't have a good way to get access to that inside the context of my historical retirement assets. So, you know, that's what drove it initially, was a desire to diversify into income producing real estate. Now, I've been a landlord before, so I've had some small rental properties.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
Yeah. And I know that as a retired person, with that list of my potpourri I just gave you, being a landlord is not among the things I want to include in that basket. You know, so getting access to people who do it for a living and do it well, you know, if you like hacking into their experience.
Exactly.
Was something, you know, that was desirable. So, you know, income producing real estate, access to professional management, and also investing with syndicators like you, you get access to types of deals that you couldn't get to as an individual investor, right? So for all those reasons, I wanted to, you know, start putting some of my assets into that direction, away from where they had been so heavily focused on equities.
You know, just, it was a big honor. I remember you said that, first of all, that's a well-articulated journey that we see more and more in our world. And I think one of the, sorry to prompt a couple of memories, but you really touched my heart when you said one of the things you really enjoyed about what we're trying to do at Accountable Equity was the community part.
Yeah.
Not that it's for everybody, but it's there. And you thought that was an interesting, I remember at first you thought that was pretty curious.
Yeah, no, it's turned out, and it's still early days, right? You know, so, you know, we've known each other for, you know, 6 months at this point, something like that.
That's right.
But the community is really good. You know, so for me, there's a few, like, just basic benefits. But then, you know, for me, coming out of an environment where I was continually getting access to new people and meeting new people, you retire and then you're not meeting new people the same way that you were when I was working. So the community is a way for me to meet new people and to kind of scratch that itch, if you will, of, you know, a curiosity, getting to know people with different backgrounds and hearing their stories. The community also, not that you should always do your own due diligence on anything, but once you get to know the community members and you gain a faith or a trust in their backgrounds and experience, it gives you an extra measure of confidence that, you know, that you have invested along with the people that you are interacting with, who you now have newfound respect for.
Yep.
So that's helpful. It also gives you, to me, another measure of comfort, because, you know, particularly when we went to you go to an investor meeting, you go to the Learn and Grow that you guys do, you hear the questions that people are asking about what's happening at the properties.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, wow, these are smart people. They're asking great questions about what's going on. And it's always better to have a group of smart people asking questions than to have just one person asking questions. Sure. You're always going to get more out of it when you have a bunch, right? So that also to me is a benefit of investing with the community.
It's an honor to get to know people like you. And I was just sharing with some of my friends and other family members about how Capital Hacking has been continually attracting more and more great people like you, because you actually are right. You know, the point is that it's not always just about the financial part. You want to get to know the people behind anything you're going to be a part of, the investments, even a club, even doing like a country club or something like that. You want to make sure that you jive with the people. So that's one of the secret sauces of having the Learn and Grow events. But by the way, I want to see if there may or may not be availability to reach out to you. But if there's someone who's listening who fits your category, he's like, man, that Ben is me. I'm Ben. And her name might be Jennifer or Billy. Right. Is there a way that you might want to make yourself available through social media or anything like that?
Probably the best way to reach me is through social media, through LinkedIn.
That's a great one.
Probably the best way to find me. Yep.
And just type in your name, Ben Garfunkel, or is it Benjamin on there? Or is it?
No, my legal name is Ben. I don't know.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah, so just Ben Garfunkel. Yeah.
Yep. And it's a pleasure to have you on here. We want to get you back anytime you want. And it's a joy to get to know you. And I hope Gina comes with us to one of these fun events in the future.
Maybe the one coming up in a couple of weeks. You never know. Yeah.
It's a pleasure to have you on here, buddy. Until next time. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. It's always great to talk to you.